Welcome, everybody. Today we're introducing a new podcast called the All In Podcast, hosted by myself, Eli Cooper, and my co-host, Mike Badzik. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing cool. Just excited to get this new thing going. It's pretty interesting. I think what we got is a pretty good idea. We're going to kind of just merge our two former podcasts. I had the Mikey and Friends, and you were doing the Rebound, so we figured we'd just kind of throw them together, and I think it's going to work out well. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, same. Gives us the opportunity to talk about a lot more broad topics and things like that. So, you guys, the Rebound Pod has merged with Mikey and Friends, like Mike said. So go ahead and follow us on Twitter at @all_in_pod, where you can find all the latest information about the podcast and interact with us as well. And today, for our very first episode, we have a special guest, my guy, Sean Turner. How's it going, Sean?
Nice. I'm pretty good. How you fellas doing, man?
Doing good. Great to have you on the show.
Family.
All right, so today we're going to talk about hoops. We're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk mostly NBA stuff. With the Jordan documentary out there, we're going to get to touch on that the first four episodes. We're going to talk about how the NBA should handle returning back to play with the coronavirus going on. And we're also going to get into some all-time starting fives of our dream teams, and also tell you guys about season-ending awards if the season ends today. So let's start, right with the NBA. Mike, what do you think should be the NBA's procedure on restarting play, and then also how it's going to impact next year?
Right, so it's tricky because there's options. I mean, they've kind of talked about doing these hub city ideas where you put all the teams or a third of the teams or half the teams in one city and then the rest in another city, and you keep them isolated. That way they can stay quarantined through it all. I think the place that was thrown out as an idea that makes the most sense is the Disney World, Orlando. You've already got all the gyms for summer league. You got the microphones. You've done this every summer. You know that you can have multiple media outlets there. Maybe you split it with Vegas, if that makes sense. But if Orlando, it's a lot easier. You can keep them quarantined. And I think, obviously ESPN, being the major media outlet for the playoffs, they have a big financial stake in wanting to get this going and finding a solution that works. And obviously they're owned by Disney, so I think there could be some working together there that makes sense for the NBA and ESPN. Problem is the tests, because they estimated, now it looks like for this type of a thing, they estimated about 15,000 tests would be needed, and I'm sure that there's going to be recurring testing going on for even players who don't show symptoms. The hard thing is going to be selling to everyone else in America and watching, who they might be sick and they can't get a test, but then they see these NBA players like, oh, they don't even have symptoms, they're getting tested just so they can play. It's like, that could be an optics problem. I think that it would go over fine because I think people are just so thirsty for some kind of sports that they would, just say, well, let's let it go because I want to see this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that people would be okay with it. I think people want it. We saw with the NFL draft, that was a huge success. All 3 days, media wise did really well. Everyone was talking about it all on Twitter, all that. I think that it makes sense for the NBA to come back. It would probably have to be in one of those hub cities, preferably Orlando, I think makes the most sense. There's a lot of money to be had and there's a lot of money to be lost, and I don't think the owners, they're going to do everything they can. They're going to do everything they can to have a playoffs, and if that, it might not start until July, maybe even August. But I think that's okay with them. They might end up kicking it back and maybe starting next season around Christmas, which I think actually could probably make a little bit of sense anyway for them starting on Christmas and then running into July, August, normally, because those are kind of the dead months, you know, in a normal sports cycle when you don't have a coronavirus and everything stops. Normally you have Super Bowl in February, March Madness, and then NBA playoffs, but you've also got NFL draft, you've also got NFL free agency, and then July and August, it's like, well, we've got regular season baseball, but that's really it. So I think it actually could make sense, the NBA, if they normally did this, if they cut off the October, November, even December part of their season where they're competing with football, I don't think it suits them to do that. If they actually just tacked it on to the end, it might make sense on a normal year, and this actually could work out well for them where this is the season they're experimenting that, and it would be tough to experiment it, you know, because you don't have all things equal. But, you know, if it shows that, you know, July and August, people could still watch basketball, I think it would make sense going forward too. But as far as getting it done for this season, I think the Orlando idea is the best we've seen yet. And I'm sure that they're throwing up ideas on the drawing board every day. So you would hope that they would eventually come to an agreement. I like the Orlando. I'm not an expert on it, but that's, you know, it's something I'd like to see. What do you guys think, Sean?
So kind of to go off of what Mike said, I agree with a lot of those points, especially with Orlando being that central location. It's pretty tough because each city has to monitor how the pandemic is affecting them in their city specifically. But that would be a pretty good idea, I think, for that type of, I guess if you would call it a tournament style-ish format. Seems like it worked to me. Obviously, I really don't have too much else on. I would like to mention as well, though, seeing a Lakers team coming back with all this rest is going to be pretty interesting, is what I would like to tack on at the end of that. But yeah, I like all the points that Mike made. So I'm
yeah, and the playoff scenarios are kind of interesting too, because, you know, obviously I don't think that they're going to do the entire like 7-game series. I doubt that happens. So what do? You go to like first round is 1 game, second round's 3 games, maybe the finals is 5 games. I can't see them doing more than 5. But if you're one of those, if you're a top 4 seed and you have a 1-game playoff in the first round and you lose, well, that's, you know, really disappointing.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then you got other teams who, you know, think about seeds 9 and 10 right now in the East and West. They're probably thinking to themselves, well, we had a chance. I mean, we shouldn't be completely left out of this, you know, because they did play, 60-some games and, you know, they were in a position where they had a chance. So maybe they do something where you have a 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9 seed, 1-game playoff, and then you do 3-game series after that. It's really interesting. They could really go a lot of, and that idea, I like that idea moving just in general. I think that they should do something like that just for fan interest, have a 1-game plan for the 7 and 8 seeds. But, you know, whatever they do is going to be fine. I would like to see them really just experiment, just really just take some chances on some stuff, because this is your one chance where you can do it without messing up the whole flow of a season.
Agreed. There's a lot of good ideas there. And the NBA really has a ton of options at this point. Like, even Spencer Dinwiddie kind of piggybacked on that. He had a, you know, NCAA tournament style idea to kind of help with, you know, people who had, you know, were upset about, you know, losing March Madness and things like that. So, you know, that was an interesting idea that he proposed on Twitter. You know, I think pretty much anyone, I agree, Mike, at this point wants basketball to come back. As long as, you know, the health of players, media, coaches, and everyone involved, obviously, is not compromised by them returning to play. I think no matter what they do, people are just going to be glad to see the NBA come back. So, you know, I think it's a win-win situation for them to try some different formats, see how they pan out, and, you know, possibly move to them in the future. If not, you know, keep it how it is. But I agree that the change in the calendar months, like starting in December and ending in July or August of, you know, on a regular basis, could certainly help with the ratings issues they're having, not having to compete with football and things like that, you know, for primetime games and stuff like that. So I think that's a, you know, this could actually turn out to be something that really benefits the NBA long term if they handle it correctly. And I'm sure Adam Silver, where I think he's the best commissioner in sports. So I think, you know, he always seems to get it right. I think he will.
Right, cool. And I wanted to ask you
when the time comes
to elaborate a little bit more on that. So during that time where you have literally just like regular season baseball, with the decrease in the views of the NBA, how do you think that would pan out if, like, in more detail, I guess I would say, and how that would pan out in their ratings? Do you think their ratings would increase back to what they were maybe a couple years ago when we had that Cavaliers versus Warriors kind of rivalry matchup?
Yeah, I think the playoff ratings would be way higher if they're in those summer months, because, you know, obviously, you know, June, the finals ratings are going to be what they are. But I think the earlier rounds of the playoff ratings are going to go up because there's literally nothing else on at that point. You're not competing with college basketball. You're not, you know, and that, those end of the regular season ratings, things like that, those are all going to go up because there's just less competition in other sports that they'd have to deal with. So
I think what would also be really interesting about that is maybe the times that they can play. Because me, myself, I know I catch a lot of the Standard Eastern games that are usually on maybe like I can catch them maybe around like 5 to 7. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those Western games start at 8, maybe 8:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30, especially like the Warriors. So I think with that format, like you said, like starting up in December and ending around maybe like June or July, I think that could probably affect the times that they play too, which I also think would be a benefit of that as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting too, even when sure. Even if, you know, not looking at forward futures, if they just come back for this, I don't know if they're in the regular season, maybe they get everybody to 70 games and then they say, okay, now let's start the playoffs or whatever they might do. You know, like, they could even have games, and they probably will, just based on how many teams are going to be down there with how many courts are available. They're probably going to have games all day, right? You're probably going to have games at 1, 4, 7, and 10 yeah. on any given Tuesday, Thursday. You know what I mean? Like, and people are home a lot right now. I mean, yep. you know, obviously, this is causing people to stay home. That's where their TVs are. So I think people are going to be watching that stuff all day now. This could be... You know, this is actually a pretty big opportunity. But they just have to get something figured out, and it has to be safe and coherent, and, you know, doesn't make the league look bad or make the league look privileged in a way that they wouldn't want it to be. But I think it's telling too that LeBron came out and said, no, we want to play. People were asking, like, well, if the players say they don't want to come play, then how are they going to do it? If the players don't want to risk it themselves, how are they going to do it? LeBron coming out and saying no, because he easily could have went the other way, right? He easily could have said, I'm not playing. I got kids. I'm not playing. And I think everyone would have been fine with that answer. But, you know, him coming out and saying we want to play, I think now the focus turns to the coaches, especially like the older coaches. When you're dealing with this coronavirus, you know, we know it affects older people, so they're probably the ones who would be more at risk or maybe more concerned about it. But, you know, they gotta figure it out. I don't know if you don't want to go, no one's gonna make you go. But that'll be interesting. That'll probably be the next thing to watch out, is how the coaches are on board, because it looks like the players are definitely on board.
Agreed. So let's say regular season ended, you know, with that last set of games that were there. Let's talk about who we would give out our season-ending awards to. So that's MVP, Sixth Man, Most Improved, Defensive Player of the Year, and Coach of the Year. We'll save MVP for last. Let's start with Coach of the Year. Who got your vote, Mike?
Nick Nurse. You know, like, I think he's probably the second or third best coach in the league. Probably the... maybe one of the probably the best coach in the East, maybe with Brad Stevens. He's right there, I think. Eric Spoelstra. But I mean, he won the championship last year. He loses Kawhi. People have them, you know, out of the playoffs in their predictions, or if they are in the playoffs, they're a 6, 7, 8 seed. And right now they're 46 and 18. So it's like, they really didn't have as much of a drop off as everybody thought. He is kind of proving that his system works. They've had guys step up. Kyle Lowry is, you know, we're going to talk about MVP, but if we did MVP rankings, Kyle Lowry is probably in my top five, maybe six, just because of everything he does, and they're the second best team in the East when everybody expected them not to be. Pascal Siakam accounts for that a lot. We're going to talk about most improved player. I didn't pick him for most improved player, but you easily could make an argument for him to win that award 2 years in a row, which would have been just, you know, unbelievable. But unfortunately, you know, since he did win it last year, he's probably not going to have a real chance to win it again. But you could make that argument because of the improvement he's shown. Serge Ibaka and Marcus Gasol somehow still find a way to be productive. They can guard any big guy combination in the league. I really like the system they run. They found ways to get every guy involved in the offense, and every guy has stepped up in the offense. You look at a guy like Fred VanVleet, who stepped up, you know, really in the finals last year, and then this year has just reached another level that nobody knew was in there. Look, get production out of guys like Terrence Davis. Nobody saw him coming. You know, so really just it doesn't matter who is on the floor for the Raptors. It just seems like the system they run is one of the best in the league. They've proven it. They've won 48 games. They probably would have won upwards of 55, maybe, yeah, probably about 55, I think. Second best team in the East. I think Nick Nurse is the choice.
I agree with you. I had Nick Nurse. After losing Kawhi, and they really didn't do anything to replace him. They just kind of like, okay, well, we'll just rock with what we got.
Right.
Still the second seed in the East, like you said. Pascal Siakam took his game to another level. Kyle Lowry's, you know, same old all-star level caliber player. Like you said, Fred VanVleet improved. Norman Powell improved. Like, I think Nick Nurse needs more credit for his ability to, as far as player development goes. Like, in his two seasons, Siakam has clearly gotten better. And I know that goes a lot to his own personal offseason work, but it also is a testament to Nick Nurse, you know, giving him opportunities and putting him in situations to succeed. Same with a Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell. Those guys saw their, you know, normal averages skyrocket, you know, as they needed them to, with them losing, you know, about 25 points per game from Kawhi. So, you know, I think that's that when most people probably would have had the Raptors either not making the playoffs or like 6 to 8 seed if they did, and they come out and they're the 2 seed with, you know, arguably the least attractive roster, you know, of all the teams that are in that top five. You know, they easily had the roster where you kind of look and say, there's nothing sexy about it. You know what I mean? It doesn't look great. You know what I mean? There's no one that excites you on there. But they're just a great basketball team, and they're very well coached. He was my clear cut choice for coach of the year.
Yeah, before the year, I had them picked, and I'm a Raptors fan, so there's the bias, just throw it out there. But I had them picked as the 3rd seed in the East. I thought they were going to finish 3rd. And even that, I guess, was too low because, I mean, they're the 2 seed, and I can't really make an argument for anybody else who's better than them in the East besides the Bucks and make it a definitive argument. You wonder about them because when it comes playoff time, you kind of wonder who that bucket getter is going to be with no Kawhi. Obviously, they relied on him heavily in the playoffs last year. But, I mean, I think they can piece it together because Siakam is going to get his. Kyle Lowry is definitely going to get his. And Fred VanVleet, saw what he did to your friend Steph Curry. So, Nick Nurse, absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead, Sean. Who's your guy?
So, there's a few guys that stood out to me. Of course, your boy Nurse was one of them. Spoelstra was also another one. But I'm actually going to go with Frank Vogel. And it's because of the push that they made late, like maybe about that last 10, 15, 20 games that they made. Pushed themselves to one of the best field goal percentage shooting teams. You can see that a lot of those guys that they brought in, like Danny Green to assist LeBron. You also got Quinn Cook that came in to help out. Also moving them up on the defensive rating, just barely behind the Bucks, which is a very large team. So with them being in the passing lanes, with how tall they are, you can really see how much, well, I guess how well coached, I would say, the Lakers are and how hard he pushes those guys to trust in that system, because this wasn't the same team at the start of the season. Like, there were a few doubts when they did start it up. So to see LeBron get some help and then have them especially turn it up on the defensive end was something that I really thought was something that should be credited to Frank Vogel and his coaching style. So that's actually who I went with. But I'm not mad at the Nick Nurse pick. That's a really good, well-coached team, too. You guys brought up some good points, especially with losing Kawhi. And they didn't really do much to replace him. And you got guys like Siakam, Ibaka, stepping up, helping out guys like Kyle Lowry. The Kyle Lowry for MVP is a real hot take. I like that.
I didn't say MVP. I said
top five.
Hey,
top five. You got to mean top five. I like that.
Top five and probably five. Top five and probably five.
I can't be mad at that.
I like Frank Vogel well. I've always kind of liked him since he was with the he had that run with the Pacers, back with Paul George and the great Roy Hibbert. So yeah, you know, if any coach can get something out of Roy Hibbert, to get Roy Hibbert in an All Star game, it gets kudos in my book. So yep. I like the pick.
Yeah, I like Vogel too. And then whenever they hired him, it was like funny because it was like everyone was like, Jason Kidd, Ty Lue, and the Lakers picked Frank Vogel, and it kind of was like out of left field. I guess if you were close to the situation, you knew that something was going on with the Rambis family and Frank Vogel. They were friends or something. But I didn't really like the hire because when they hired him, you just thought about the Pacers teams who didn't get over the hump. And then there was the Orlando stint, which was like just really bad. I think the Orlando stint gets overlooked sometimes when we talk about him now, but it was really bad. But anyway, so you have Indiana, and what was Indiana? They were known for their defense, and here they are, enough. The Lakers are one of the three best defensive teams in the league. So clearly his imprint was felt. Anthony Davis is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate for sure. LeBron is playing some of the best defense we've seen him play in a decade, probably. It's been impressive. I've been really impressed with.
So we'll move on to the next award, and let's talk about most improved player. There were a lot of players who were eligible for this category. And Sean, we'll start with you. Who'd you have for most improved player?
Let me just take this thing over and say I pick Brandon Ingram. Another Lakers on there again. I pick Brandon Ingram. Handle with the ball has been better. He's cut down on some of the bad shots he's been taking. Back to the basket game has improved. He's knocking down big time shots. That's my pick. That simple.
Brandon Ingram. I love that pick. I am going to agree with you. I had Brandon Ingram as well. I also considered Jason Tatum. It was in the discussion for me, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, both of those guys tremendously improved their games from last year to this year. But Brandon Ingram was almost dead in the water. Like, people had written him off as a bust, you know, as a top two pick. But the change of scenery clearly woke this guy up, because he turned into a go-to guy for a New Orleans team that was making a playoff push with Zion coming back. You know, before the season was stopped, and you know, an 8-point jump in his points per game, and it's not because of a minutes increase, where a lot of times that's where you see that. He's playing about the same amount of minutes, but he's taking more shots, but really only four more shots a game. With the improvement really came from 3-point area. He's taken 6 a game now. He had never taken more than 2 a game in his career. And he's shooting 39%, pretty close to what his career high was in 3-point percentage, with the increase in attempts. That shows me a clear development in his confidence. That's off-season. That's clear off-season work, something he really wanted to focus on and improve. His free throw percentage went up 17.3%. That's a big help. His rebounds were up. His assists were up from last year. His steals, blocks tied a career high. Like, there was nothing that Brandon Ingram wasn't doing this year that was better than he did before. And I, you know, early in the season, he was my guy. And then with Zion coming back, I was really looking closely to see if his production was going to be affected by that. And it really wasn't. The two were able to coexist well. And they've got a nice little front court duo to build on in the future, along with Lonzo in the backcourt, who's going to be a good facilitator for both of them, and some other good pieces. New Orleans is building nicely, but I think clear-cut most improved player for me was Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, I really liked Brandon Ingram season two. Really impressive. I was kind of getting lower on him as he was exiting the Lakers. I'm sure Sean forgot to say previous Laker guy on there. So Brandon, like, I feel bad for him almost because, you know, he was the number two pick in the draft and he goes to the Lakers. And just when he really was about to, you know, enter a part of his career where he could have the ball and do some things well, you know, LeBron James yep. signs with the Lakers. And Brandon Ingram spends a lot of his time watching LeBron James with the ball, you know, and doing some things when he has it, but it's tough. You know, his usage rates were so low. But I liked him, but I just didn't ever see it because it's tough because he never had the ball, really. Then he goes to New Orleans, and in the first half of the year, he's unbelievable. He's averaging 25, and he's looking like he's going to be the clear-cut most improved player, like you said. And then Zion comes back, and Zion, they played well together. You could tell B.I., he could get a little disinterested sometimes when he wasn't getting the ball as much as he was before. So I hope that they find a happy median and can coexist. I think with Lonzo, he's a good third piece for that because of his facilitating. I think that they'll work out well together. I agree with you. I think that's New Orleans has a really good young core there. I did not go with Brandon Ingram, though. But also, I just want to say, like, I think Luka's probably going to win this award in real life. I think Luka, you know, he averaged 28, 8, and 8. He was good his rookie year, but he wasn't near that good. And he's going to be a top four MVP candidate. So I think Luka's probably going to win in real life. For this, I went with Bam Adebayo.
Ooh, I like that pick.
He jumped from 9 to 16 points a game, jumped from 7 to 10.5 rebounds a game. They moved Hassan Whiteside out of the way for him after last year. That's a great decision by Miami. They always know what they're doing. But moving him and letting Bam flourish was a really good idea. He is kind of special because on offense, he can really pass, and he takes good, smart shots. On defense, that's where he's really elite, though, in his rebounding. But on defense, you know, one of the things in, like, today's NBA I always look for when the big guys is what happens – when you have to switch on a pick and roll. And you can tell some guys just cannot handle it and they just get torched every time. You think of all the Steph Curry videos against big guys because they just cannot do it. Tristan Thompson did it pretty well in the finals and that really helped the Cavs when they beat them. But back to Bam, he does it. You can't even tell he's a big guy switching out. He's got the same footwork, the same lateral quickness as any of the guards that he's playing with. He fits in so well with Jimmy and what they're trying to do down there. Eric Spoelstra is a great coach for him because of the defense. Bam is like top 10 in rebounds. He's top 10 in blocks. His improvement's been great. He's my most improved player. I think Luka's probably going to win, but I went with Bam.
I like that pick a lot, especially because Bam, like you mentioned, he's a very good passer at the position. 5 assists a game from a center. And I don't think anyone would have projected that to be a part of his game coming out of Kentucky. So I agree. I really like that pick a lot. You certainly can't go wrong with Bam Adebayo. Again, there were a lot of good candidates for this, for sure. Especially this year. So let's get to the next one. Let's talk Sixth Man of the Year. Sean, why don't you kick this one off?
Oh, man. I'm going with the man, the famous man again. Lou Will is who I'm selecting for Sixth Man of the Year. Let me back in. So, Lou Will, Pat Bev was down for a little bit, so we know it picked up just a little bit more. I believe he started maybe around 3 games, and he came off the bench for around 54. So, you can obviously see his impact on the court from scoring, big-time team player. With the ball in his hands, create shots when he needs to. Giving you buckets off the bench, giving you that push that you need to beat some of these teams with the Lakers, with competing with the Lakers. I went with Lou Will for that one.
Yeah, can't go wrong with Lou Will. I mean, you know, he's solid. 19 a game. That's what he's going to do. It's what he's been doing for, you know, 10 years now, coming off the bench and giving you 15 to 20 points a game. I like the pick. I think that you can't, you know, Lou Williams is never going to be a wrong pick for this category because of his resume. I think that Montrezl Harrell might have been the better choice for the Clippers because of what he does defensively. I, for this, though, actually went with Dennis Schroeder. And I think it's weird that Oklahoma City is going to have this season that nobody expected that's better than all the projections. And a lot of that has to do with Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but the guy who's going to win an award is Dennis Schroeder coming off the bench for those guys. His best season ever, 19 points a game, shot at 38% from three. You know, he's a minus on the defensive end probably, but, you know, when he shoots 38% from three, he's going to be really affected. And his usage rates are high when he goes in there. But he really made the most of his minutes, and I think playing alongside, a lot of the time he was with another point guard. He was with Chris or he was with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That helps him. He can create more space in those scenarios. And I almost gave up on Dennis Schroeder when he first came to the Hawks. I was really excited about him. I thought, oh, he's quick. This is going to work out well. Athletic point guard. Didn't really work out well. Never got in a groove there, and then he comes to Oklahoma City, and it looked like it still wasn't going to, and now this season he's having a great year, and the Thunder are having a great year. Chris Paul, you know, Sam Presti looks like a genius for not moving Chris Paul. I don't think that they were ever going to move Chris Paul because of that huge contract. You know, they had to get rid of one terrible contract to get another one, but they also got some picks back in return. I don't know. I mean, the Thunder probably, who would they have played in the first round? They probably were the sixth seed, so maybe they play the three seed. They play Denver or Dallas. They could have easily wound up in the second round of the playoffs this year. And Dennis Schroeder was a big reason why, coming off the bench, 19 a game. That's what I went with. Who you got, Coop?
I'm going to go with the guy that you mentioned earlier, Lou Will's teammate, Montrezl Harrell, because of his impact on both sides of the ball. And he plays about 2 minutes less than Lou Will, and actually started a few less games than Lou Will did as well, and still put up about the same number of points per game. Where, you know, especially for bigs in today's game, that's pretty difficult because they don't quite get the touches that or have the control that guards have. So he's much more impactful defensively than Lou Will is. So this year, I went with Montrezl Harrell. He got my vote.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Montrezl, he's been great. I'm surprised that because last year he was so good too, and you know, there was worries that when Kawhi comes in and PG comes in that he's going to be out of the offense, and then he's not starting, and people are wondering what's going on. But I mean, he's a bull in a china shop. He's got super high energy. He plays great defense. He's really an ideal bench player.
Yeah, can't go wrong with any of those picks. I agree. Let's move on to the next one. I believe we have Defensive Player of the Year next, which a lot of good candidates for this one. I'm going to kick this one off. My Defensive Player of the Year, I think, now, as you guys know, I'm a Sixers fan.
Sure.
But I'm not being a homer with this pick. Ben Simmons was the Defensive Player of the Year. League leader in steals. He can defend 1 through 4, and he's not one of those guys with him, even though he's leading the league in steals, it's not like a Steph Curry or AI situation where they're opportunists and they really can't defend. Ben Simmons is probably the best defensive guard in the league, and he can guard 1 through 4 with no problems. And I think that's the one real big increase in his game. Everybody really wanted to see him, including myself, wanted to see him shoot more threes and become more aggressive on the offensive end. We didn't quite see that this year, and you know, obviously the Sixers had their issues as a team that I won't get into. But Ben Simmons absolutely took it upon himself to improve on the defensive end and be locked in more. He guarded everybody's best player, and he did a damn good job on everybody's best player. So my guy, Ben Simmons, Defensive Player of the Year.
I love that pick. I think he is absolutely the best defensive guard in the league, and he hustles his ass off too. First in steals, second in deflections, third in loose balls recovered. I mean, you can't ask for more out of a defensive point guard than that. He spent 15% of his time or more floor defending the 1, 2, 3, and 4, which means more than 15% of the time he's guarding a point guard, more than 15% of the time he's guarding a 2 guard, more than 15% of the time he's guarding a 3 guard, more than 15% of the time he's guarding a 4 guard. Nobody else spreads it out like that and guards that many different positions on the floor. So yeah, you can't say enough about Ben Simmons' defense. I actually went with Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, we're going to talk more about him, I'm sure, but PER 31.6. He's averaging, you know. And the thing is, too, about Giannis is he only played 30 minutes a game. So you have to look at his numbers kind of skewed a little bit if he would have played as much as everyone else. But, you know, his defensive box row plus minus is 4.1. So basically that will just it will compare you to the average defender and base your impact off that. His is 4.1. The next highest player was 3.1. So that just tells you the gap there was. You know, obviously he's doing everything else on the floor too. And I mean, you're just that long and that athletic. You know, your impact is just so.
I think you guys bring up a good point about being able to guard multiple positions. Me, myself, I do like the Ben Simmons pick, obviously, because of the steals. He's a long guy, so he's in those passing lanes, which creates a lot of fast break points for the Sixers. I'm going to side with Mike on this one. I went with Giannis. And the reason why, even though he's having some season lows in steals and actually for his career, he's at 1.3 this year. But what is a big factor into his defensive efficiency, I would say, is out of the players that he has guarded, out of 250 shots, he's held his opponents to around 36%, which is pretty good, I would say, for somebody that's given it 100% on both ends of the floor. So that's actually who I have for my pick, is Giannis.
Yeah. And he plays great, and he doesn't foul either. You know, like long guys, sometimes you got lanky guys who are athletic and they just throw themselves around. I mean, Giannis, he picks up 3 fouls a game, but he's never in foul trouble. Yeah, you know, he plays 30 minutes a game. That goes into it, too. But, you know, it just shows that he's very skilled on that side of the floor.
All right. So let's move into the last and final award, probably the most controversial that we're going to talk about here. MVP, Mike. Oh, wait, that's
wait,
right.
Did we do rookie?
Let me backpedal. Let's do rookie
fine.
Of the year.
That's fine.
Who you guys got?
Yeah. Ja. I got Ja. 17.6, 7 assists. He's averaging a steal. He's probably a negative on the defensive side as of right now, but I think he'll get better with his athletic ability. He just kind of needs to actually learn how to play defense instead of just being athletic and playing defense. But I think once he gets that, and I think he will have it quickly. Memphis, what are they, the 7 seed right now or the 8 seed maybe? But
8 seed.
I think they would have made the playoffs. And
yep.
Yeah, the 8 seed, okay, so they're fighting to make the playoffs. And that's one of the really interesting storylines, too, that we didn't get is this whole Ja-Zion thing. And I don't know if you guys are going to pick Zion. I won't talk about him. But, you know, them battling for that last playoff spot would have been really fun. They would have, I think they had a couple matchups that would have been on ESPN in the last couple games of the year, fighting for that. And you know, they're fighting for the Rookie of the Year at the same time. So, you know, Zion, what he did was amazing. I just think Ja, you know, the full length of the season, night in, night out, making Memphis a contender to make the playoffs, that alone.
Agreed. I'm going to co-sign that. He was the clear-cut Rookie of the Year for me. Had Zion Williamson played, you know, at least half a season, maybe we can have a discussion there, but I don't think anyone else even deserves consideration this year. Ja Morant was by far, over the course of the season, the best rookie in the league. Sean, what you think?
I think I'm right with you guys. I think that's a pretty clear cut one, so I'll keep it pretty short. Ja Morant's got my vote. 16 points per game, shooting a decent percentage from the field, around 7 assists per game in the passing lanes, just a little bit. I think it's a pretty easy pick for him this year. Yet Zion, I know we like a lot of guys like to bring him up in that too. Obviously, very talented young man. 23 points a game when he did come back, cutting into Brandon Ingram shots. But, of course, that comes with having another big time up and coming star on your team. But I think it's pretty easy that we can unanimously select John Morant for this one.
All right, so we're all in agreement there. Now we can move on to MVP. And
dun, dun, dun.
Sean, who was your pick for regular season MVP if it ended today?
The man again, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is my guy right there. He is on both ends of the floor. He rebounds. He handles the ball. He creates off the ball, back to the basket. You can see him develop in a mid-range game, trying to expand his range as well. So I could go on about his ball movement and creating plays on the offensive end, but then he complements that as well with how hard he goes on defense. He's not afraid to get dunked on. You're going up for something, he's there. He's chased down blocks. He's got the whole package. Honestly, if he was to come with a more respectable jumper from three, I think it's not anyone close to him in this MVP race. But you also got to consider some other guys like LeBron James. I would think Luka is a third place runner-up to both of those guys. But I'm going with Giannis in this one.
What you thinking, Mike?
Yeah, it's Giannis for me. PER 31.6, just crazy. The win share is 10.4. And the Bucks too, like, they're beating the brakes off people. These games aren't even close. They're probably gonna win 70 games. We're getting close to it. You know, one of the best teams we've seen from a plus-minus defensive offensive rating scenario. Just dominant all the way around. Well-coached team, and Giannis is the best player on that team. You know, I mentioned that he only plays 30 minutes a game. So I kind of like to go and look at his stats per 36 just to see how mind crazy they are. So if you took his numbers per 36 minutes, if he averaged 36 minutes a game, the guy's would be averaging 34.5 points and 16 rebounds and 7 assists. I mean, it's just absurd. I mean, 34.5 points and 16 rebounds, if that's not enough of Shaq numbers for you. You know, you add in the 7 assists, the things he's doing playing point forward. I mean, it's just unbelievable. He's, you know, pushing it to be the best player in the league. I really liked their chances to get out of the East this year. I think that this could have really been his coronation. And it still might be if you know, they figure out a plan like we talked about. But, you know, just all around. And the thing, too, like, he won the MVP last season. And we're coming into this season. We're like, yeah, we love Giannis. He's just got to develop that three-point shot, and he'll be unstoppable. And you know what? Actually, he really didn't even develop it, though. I mean, he still only shot at 30% this year from three, but he's just so dominant. And he's better than he was last year. But the threes really haven't improved. He's just better at everything else. His impact on defense that I talked about before, I think it's Giannis. LeBron is such an interesting case. He was really making a push there at the end. I think that if he would have had maybe 25 more games, he could have made it a real conversation. But, I mean, Giannis had like the highest PER of all time. It's really tough to go against him. LeBron, honorable mention, but Giannis is my guy. What about you, Coop?
Well, I mean, let's give a lot of credit to 35-year-old, year 17 LeBron, leading the league in assists at 10.6 a game. You know, his usual about 26 points, 8 rebounds. Can't, you know, really ask for much more than that from LeBron. But leading the league in assists at 35 years old was incredible to me. But Giannis was unbelievable this year. His team's the number one seed in the entire league. They had the best record in the league. Like you said, one of the highest, if not the highest, PER ever for a season. And he's top three in scoring, third in scoring. He's third in rebounding. And like you said, first in PER and still top 25 in assists. So he distributes as well. And like you said, he's arguably the best defensive player in the league. So, you know, what case can be made against the guy to not be MVP? So I'm going to go ahead and make it unanimous and say, I'm going to go with Giannis as well for MVP. I think LeBron's push was a little too little too late. If the season ended as of, you know, now, if they cut it off right where it ended, you know, where it was. I think it's just too hard to make an argument against Giannis, really.
Yeah. There's been eight. So here's something interesting. There's been eight guys ever who have done a PER of 31.5 for a season. There's been eight ever. And PER is, like, interesting. You know, you can argue whether or not it's maybe the best metric, but I think it does a pretty good job for at least getting you a reference point. So top eight ever. So Wilt Chamberlain's got the top two, you know, in the early 60s, 31.82, 31.74. Then you got Michael Jordan in 88, LeBron in 08-09, Michael Jordan in 90-91, Wilt again, and then Giannis is the next one on that list. Like, Giannis this season is the next one on that list. I mean, it's really unbelievable just how historic of a season him and the Bucks had. And then also, honorable mention, Steph Curry, his 15-16 year, he was at 31.46. So that was really impressive, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Had to throw that in for you.
All right. So one thing we got to get into today is probably the biggest topic in basketball right now is the Last Dance, Michael Jordan, 10-part series. As of this recording, we're four episodes in. What's your biggest takeaway, guys? Sean, what's your biggest takeaway from this documentary?
Biggest takeaway, I would say, is the era of basketball that Jordan played in. Because I know we'll touch on it just a little bit here and comparing the eras.
Let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. I would say the comparing of eras is obviously something that everybody wants to talk about, and it's always the Jordan, Kobe, Bron topic. So with the Jordan doc, me, myself, I'm finding out a lot about just that era of basketball in general, especially the bad blood. I mean, everyone knows about the bad blood they have with the Pistons. So, I mean, Jordan was an absolute killer. And I already say a lot of people can make the argument about their top five. And I think Jordan is going to be my number one. And then Kobe's going to follow that shortly second. And then we'll get to, like, the LeBrons. And then I know some of the older generation will pick maybe, like, some of the Magics. But I'm just going off of who I've seen. That's going to be my order. And it's simply because how you get things done. Oh, I'm sorry, not how you get things done, as long as you get them done. And Jordan being such a force on both ends of the floor, there's a season where he was the highest scorer in the league, also the defensive player of the year in the league, as well as the MVP. It's just that simple. That just speaks volume about how he approaches the game. So finding out a lot about Jordan, which we already knew about his mentality on the court, just finding out about like how he played the game, how he practiced, how intense he was in practice, how he pushed his teammates in practice. So, I mean, he was a very vocal guy. I think we knew that was going to be a big part of the documentary coming in. So, hey, I'm just enjoying it. I honestly wish I could just sit down and watch all of the episodes at once. Mm-hmm. Is how I'm taking it, because it's just so much information that I'm finding out about, especially with us sitting right now in the midst as of this recording. We just got a little bit, I think probably around halfway into when Dennis joined the team. Mm-hmm. You could clearly see a little bit of him being unhappy with the return of Scotty. Because before, it was Mike and Scotty. So for him to step up and play the role that he did in that era of basketball, and not really, like, now you don't see guys really deferring too much on having the basketball. And then when you see those guys, you can see that they're special, and they play a pretty important role in the teams that they are in now. For example, Klay Thompson in that Warriors, what we'll call, I guess, a dynasty. Those guys, they don't necessarily need the ball in their hands, but they can have the balls in their hand and create a little bit as well, and complement the team as a whole. So, with Dennis taking that back seat once Scotty got back, you could see that emotion in this past episode that they played. But that was really the biggest takeaway that I had from it, is how Jordan kind of cooperated with his teammates, how he was vocal to him, how he was relentless at him, like, holding people accountable every practice, every game, and all of them collectively wanting to go out there and get a win, and Jordan held them to that. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I took away from it so far, and I'm looking forward to the later episodes.
Agreed, man. I'm looking forward to episodes 5 and 6 as well, coming up on Sunday. For me, the documentary didn't teach me much more about Michael himself than I already knew, because there's been so many stories told about Michael, you know, and even like the Bad Boy Pistons 30 for 30 kind of told us a lot about their rivalry with the Bulls. So none of that information was really new for me, and I knew he was hard on his teammates, you know, so that wasn't new. For me, I think the biggest thing that I learned was the Dennis Rodman 48-hour Vegas thing. I didn't know that that happened. And that was hilarious to me, honestly. I knew once they were talking about a 48-hour, no one takes a 48-hour vacation in Vegas. Like, I knew that was completely unrealistic, and it was never going to be 48 hours. But I thought that was so hilarious that they really let Dennis Rodman take a leave of absence to go party in the middle of a season because he was stressed out. And I'm just thinking, like, who in today's NBA would be able to get away with that at all? Maybe like Nick Young when he was still playing would probably be the only guy that like doesn't get a lot of heat for that.
Well, I mean, yeah, like you can look at it that way, or you can look at it the other way. Like, you know, like if LeBron told the Lakers, "Hey, I'm going to Vegas for 2 days. Fuck off. What are they going to say? Oh, you're benched for the next 5 games. No, they're not going to bench him. He does whatever he wants. Yeah. Of course he does. They all do. Kawhi doesn't even show up half the games. He doesn't even come to the arena. So I think that, I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of the players now would get away with something like that.
Maybe. I mean,
I think it's just interesting because it's Rodman. And his whole story is just so fascinating.
So, you know, for me, that was the most entertaining part, in my opinion. I also didn't really know much about Jerry Krause, and that was actually their, you know, final season together, and that he made it so clear that he was breaking up the team. I think unless you like really studied the Bulls, or something like that, or you're a Bulls historian, you probably had to live in that era to really know that. And I didn't listen to Michael's Hall of Fame speech, so I didn't know anything about Jerry Krause really, or that the Space Jam guy was kind of designed to look like him. I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but it doesn't seem like it now.
Not at all.
You know, and it was shocking to me that he was so open with his comments. Like he flat out said Phil Jackson wasn't coming back. Like almost no GMs do that anymore. They'll at least like say, well, you know, we'll evaluate at the end of the season. No, Jerry Krause is like, no, Phil Jackson's leaving at the end of the year, and anyone who has a problem with it can go out the door with him. And I was like, yo, like that's a cutthroat GM right there. And you know, you got to give him some credit because he did put together a 6-time champion team. He made the trade to get Scottie Pippen on draft night from the Sonics, which ended up being very huge for them as far as championship success. So, you know, you got to give him some credit there, but he was harsh. It's just as far as his handling of players and things like that.
Yeah, just like he is really getting the short end of this documentary. Like, I mean, he was the GM for 6 championships, and, you know, he's like an evil guy now. He's the villain. I mean, I guess they need someone to be the quote-unquote villain. Yeah, obviously, he made a huge mistake by breaking them up after that 98 season. Who knows how many more championships they would have won. I don't know. I think realistically, 2 more would be the max. But who knows, because, you know, they didn't let it play out. And, you know, if Jerry doesn't make Phil leave, then Michael probably stays, and it's a completely different story. And, you know, Jerry did. He made some good moves. You know, you mentioned the Pippen one. He got B.J. Armstrong. He got they talked about the Bill Cartwright trade for Horace Grant. I don't think that he was an inept GM. No. I just think that he was very strong-headed, and so was Phil. You know, we know Phil, from what we know now, 30 years later, is a very strong – or 20 years later, sorry, is a very strong-headed guy. We saw – him with the Lakers was the same way, and with the Knicks in that job was very, you know, stuck in his ways. So I'm sure that there was more back and forth than what's being told in the doc, but unfortunately Jerry's not here to defend himself, so this is how it's going to go.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I don't love is, you know, they're dragging his name through the mud and he's not here to defend himself. I'm not really a fan of that ever. in any situation. And I get it. They're telling their truths about what happened. And clearly, even at the time, clearly the players didn't like him. So they're not really going to change their stance just because he's not here. But it seems unfair in some way that he's not here to defend himself. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but you know what? That's just how it goes. That's history. That's how history is told. So I'm fine with it. So it makes the documentary better to watch.
For sure.
So my thing with enjoying the documentary, I like it. I think it's cool to see like more insight on that era of basketball. You realize how terrible the courts were back then. Those things were never swept, apparently. The Bad Boy Pistons, I love their story. I think that they probably, if Isaiah doesn't get hurt, they might even have another championship. But whatever, what are you gonna do? Like the Jordan rules, I think that the Jordan rules were, for some reason, it was taken as beat the crap out of Jordan. Well, that's not really what the Jordan rules are. I mean, that's a small part of it at the end, that if he drives to the hoop, don't let him score uncontested. But really, it's, you know, you make him drive left, you make him pull up right, so you fade him to the elbow instead of the baseline. I think that that's all interesting. I think it's cool too, like you guys didn't grow up in that era, so to see just the aura that Michael had, like when they had whenever they were overseas, and I don't know if it was the cameraman or somebody, he's asking him for an autograph, and Michael's like, "Dude, what the hell's wrong with you?" Like, you know, doesn't even respond to him. It was just, you know, that's cool to see, and you know, really how he changed basketball from a popularity standpoint. You know, he really exploded everything, even in a way that I'm not sure LeBron has or Kobe has. So you know, his power, you know, you wonder if they'll do one of these things for LeBron one day or something like that. But I mean, right now it's kind of like, this guy is the GOAT, you know, greatest of all time. I'm not saying whether or not you think LeBron is a better basketball player, that's kind of a different thing, but just from a GOAT perspective, greatest of all time, Jordan's taking the cake right now. And things like this documentary are helping that when it produces this aura that was already around him that just continues to grow as we get reminded of how great he really was.
Yeah, I think that's key, you know, is kind of seeing how his legacy developed, and that he had to go through kind of similar to what LeBron had to go through early in his career. Like, he was a great player, but he couldn't really get his teammates over the hump. Because that is not at all how anyone remembers Michael anymore. But a lot of people forget that was the mark on him until he finally got that first one. So that's another big takeaway I would say I had from the documentary as well. So let's wrap up. And since we're talking about, you know, different eras and things like that, let's talk about our all-time starting fives. Everyone loves a good list, right? You know, and what we're looking for here is your best ideal team, not best player at each position. You're putting a team together, you know, you're the coach or GM or both, and you're constructing a roster with any player you can of all time in your starting five. Mike, who are you picking?
So, yeah, this is tough. Like, when you talk about, like, building a team versus who are the best five guys at each position. So I'll just quickly say, if we're doing who's the best at each position, for me, I think it goes Magic, Jordan, LeBron, Duncan at power forward, even though he's probably more of a center, and Kareem at center. But for this exercise, what we're doing is trying to put the team out there that we think gives us the best chance to win the championship. So for that, I put Steph at point guard. Just, you know, the shooting is unreal. You put him, you know, because obviously the other guys in this team are going to be Michael Jordan and LeBron James, so the ball's not always going to be in Steph's hands. You want a guy who can create for others but also shoot it better than anybody else ever has. You know, the defensive side is where we're probably going to have the issue taking him over Magic, but, you know, he's going to be guarding the worst player on the floor for the other team, so I'm fine with him. We can hide him appropriately. He plays pretty good off the ball anyway, so I'm fine with Steph at point guard. Two guard is Jordan. No doubt about it. I just told you he's the GOAT, so no question. So at the three, you know, it's kind of tough, like, when you look at, like, three, four, five, because especially now we're in this like positionless age of basketball. It's like, well, what is a small forward? What is a power forward? Questions that have kept philosophers going for thousands of years. I would say for small forward, I went with LeBron. Facilitator, I think he's probably the best player ever, probably the second greatest player ever if we're doing it like that. So I think LeBron's an easy choice. The power forward is where, again, you can kind of make things work better with small forwards moving and playing bigger, especially with a guy like I picked, who's Kevin Durant. I went back and forth with Durant and Larry Bird for this spot, but I just think KD's overall scoring is just it's tough to match. And, you know, he almost won Defensive Player of the Year 2-3 years ago. I think KD is probably a better player than Larry Bird, although Bird's higher on the GOAT rankings if you're doing that. And then at the five, I would probably go with Shaq, just from a sheer dominance standpoint. I think he was more dominant than any other center. If I wanted to really stretch things out and do it that way, I might even take a guy like Giannis, current Giannis, or, you know, maybe Hakeem. You know, center is tough because even when you're comparing, center's probably okay, so for all the positions, we always talk about how comparing across eras is so tough. We can't really compare across eras because it's a different play style. Well, like centers is kind of easier, especially if you do like post-1980, because, I mean, pre-1980, you got like Wilt and Bill Russell, and they're doing whatever they want, so you don't really want to include them. But if you look at the centers in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, even today is harder because they don't get a lot of touches. But it's not that difficult to compare those centers. So you look at like Shaq and Hakeem; those are probably the two biggest ones, and Kareem. I went with Shaq. I just think he's the most dominant, and at the peak of his powers, he was just as athletic as any other center that has ever played. So that's my five. I'll go Steph, Jordan, LeBron, KD, Shaq.
Okay, nice, solid five. Sean, who's your five?
So Mike actually took the words right out of my mouth. So I'm going to switch mine up just a little bit. So I'm still going to stick with Steph at that point guard position. And kind of just how Mike said, the two people he's going to be accompanied with are going to be fantastic players in Jordan and LeBron. So I think it's pretty easy that I can sub out Magic, who is obviously one of the other guys that you would mention at that position when you're starting about building a team that's going to win a championship. So I'm taking Steph there. Jordan at number two, pretty simple. And then, like Mike said, with the way that basketball is played today, we're seeing a new format where you have guys like Ben Simmons running an offense because of how good of ball handlers we have in the league nowadays. So Bron is actually going to be at my third spot. And Mike went with KD, and I love that pick on that team because it gives you more of that three-point shooting element. We've seen him and KD play off of each other. So I love that pick at the four. I'm going to go a little bit bigger, though, and a little bit older. I'm going to go with Hakeem at that four, if that's fine. And then we're going to go even bigger with the most dominant man we've ever seen have the basketball in the paint, the Diesel. Shaq is my number five. So that would be my team if I'm putting together.
So Hakeem at the four.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it up. I know you switched up Duncan, so I'm going to switch up Hakeem just a little bit and put him at the four.
That's fine.
Okay, so you got
to
box out.
Yeah, you're going to have to have some good guys in there.
Yeah.
I was almost thinking about putting Giannis at that fourth spot if I was going a little bit more up to date, but since Mike went with KD, a newer guy, I decided I'm going to switch it up and go with one of the older guys. Get two of the older guys in there with Jordan and Hakeem.
Okay. Sure. Interesting. Not quite the way I would go. So what I want to explain my five before I get it. So first things first, I have to have my two favorite players of all time in my five. It's just how it's going to go. Steph Curry, Kobe Bryant, got to be in it. So those guys have to be in it. Unfortunately, Michael gets the boot because I have Kobe. So, you know, not that I think Kobe's better. Let's just clarify that. Not
Michael
that I think Kobe's better.
Ooh, they're kind of comfortable.
But listen, Kobe's got to be in there. Rest in peace to Kobe and Gigi, of course. But so Kobe's got to be in there. Steph's got to be in there. At the three, I have LeBron, which I think pretty much everybody and their grandmothers has at this point. I also have KD at the four because, you know, for me, I like a four out, one in type system with good floor spacing. And LeBron is going to need snipers on the floor. So we got Curry, we got KD, and Kobe can even knock down shots as well to space the floor for LeBron when he's in, you know, attack mode. So that's my four. And then what I really like from my center spot is a big man who can protect the rim and defend at the rim and also be able to play in pick and roll and pick and pop situations, whether that pop is to the three or mid-range pick and pop type situation. So I kind of went back and forth on the five spot, but ultimately I did land on Hakeem Olajuwon because you can also throw it to him down on the block and he'll have plenty of space and room to operate and show off that elite footwork that he had. He's going to protect the rim. If we need to switch, he's not going to get embarrassed by a guard on the perimeter because he has good feet. He can move. You know, obviously we don't want him guarding guards all the time. Right. But if he gets caught in a situation where he has to switch, I'm confident that he can hold his own on some possessions. So I went with Hakeem at my five spot, and we're going to play a fast pace, a lot of pick and rolls, pick and pop situations. Now, driving
I like that. I like Hakeem at the five. Same with Shaq. You know, it's interesting too because these lineup that I just put out, this Steph, Jordan, Bron, KD, Shaq, that would be my lineup to start the game and give me 36 minutes a night for those five. But honestly, if I could, probably what I would do is I would have a six man by the name of either Klay Thompson or Ray Allen. And probably my finishing lineup, my last 2 minutes, we're in the playoffs, last 2 minutes, the floor automatically gets tighter in the playoffs in those situations. So normally you'll see teams go smaller. So that's why I like the Lakers, like this year. They start Anthony Davis at the four, but he finishes the game at the five usually. So probably what I would do is just put in Steph, Klay or Ray Allen, probably. I prefer Klay probably for defense too. And then Steph, Klay, Jordan, Bron, KD. Bron slash KD playing the five. I don't think it matters because that's going to force the other team to go small too. And then I think, you know what I mean? So that's just interesting because when you have guys like Steph, Jordan, Bron, KD, you need someone who's okay with, I'm not going to dribble the ball more than 15 times in this whole game. Right. But I'm cool with that. Let me just spot up and shoot. And I think Klay does that better than anyone ever. So just throwing that in there, maybe last 2 minutes of the game, I changed that up.
I wanted to fit Klay in my team so bad because of what you just said. He's a guy who doesn't need to dribble the ball at all to be effective. And regardless of what he's doing on the offensive end, he's going to guard and defend on the other end. I wanted to fit him in. I was thinking about going with him at the three and Bron at the four, but I was like, KD's just too elite of a scorer for me not to have him in there. Well, but if I could have him as a six man, absolutely.
KD gives you that shooting anyway, so it's like, well, if I'm going to bump out somebody for Klay, why would I bump out KD? He's just, you know.
Right. So, all right. Well, that's all the topics. Yeah, I like that, man. And there's a lot of different lineups that I would like to do all time. I even thought about AD at the five. But, you know, that's, you know, a topic for another day. So maybe when we think about it, we come up with some other ones. But, yeah, man, I like you guys' lineups. I think Sean was pressured into changing his.
Unfortunately. I really want them to see them come after you for that Kobe over Jordan take in the midst of this doc, only because it's in the midst of this doc.
Listen, Twitter Jordan stands, come for me. I'm here all day. I got nothing to do. Bring it. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up our show. This was a great first episode, Mike. What do you think?
Absolutely, man. Loved it. Loved the format. Glad we got Sean on this one. We're gonna do a lot of them. We're just gonna be me and Coop, but we're definitely gonna have guests on too, and we're gonna be talking about all kinds of different stuff: basketball, football, soccer, music, politics, and we'll have guests on appropriate for each topic. So really looking forward to it, man. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, guys, make sure you guys tune in. Follow us on Twitter at @all_in_pod. You can follow each of us individually. I'm at EL1_coop. Mike is at King in the Mike. And Sean, I'm sorry, Sean, you're going to have to give your
time. They don't play tape.
They don't play. I don't know why.
Hey, guys, thank you. Thank you for having me on. Peace.
Yes, sir. It was a pleasure.
No, hey, thanks for joining us, man. That's going to wrap. That's a wrap. Thank you guys for tuning in to episode 1 of the All In podcast. And stay tuned for more. Love you guys. Stay safe during this pandemic. Be extra careful. Wash your hands. All that good stuff. And you guys be great.